This is Jay Sekulow, a comprehensive analysis of our case involving Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Welcome to the broadcast, everyone. I thought the thing to do on this Friday would be to go back where we are on this case involving Loretta Lynch, the former Attorney General of the United States, and former President Bill Clinton, because we've now had a week to go through this. So I'll tell you what we've done. You can hear the noise, but we have actually put together, our team has put together a thorough timeline analysis and also a briefing book so that we could get all of the different aspects of this case understood, because there's both interdepartmental aspects, FBI, DOJ, and now White House, media contacts as well, and then all of the back and forth, including going to people that were in charge of, quote, crisis management, is how they described their position. So I want to give you a framework now that we've been able to work on this for a week. And we're still finding out information, by the way. I'm in studio with Professor Harry Hutchison, our senior counsel. Joining me from Washington, D.C. is Sam Bennett, our director of governmental affairs. Logan is with me in the media center. Logan, before we start on really any kind of substantive analysis here, I think it's important to point out that this all started because the local affiliate, television affiliate of ABC News in Phoenix got wind of this meeting between Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton. In fact, we've got an email. It's our document number 0001. And that is from Mike Levine from ABC to Melanie Newman from the Office of Public Affairs, the Department of Justice. Hey, guys, wanted to address something ASAP. Apparently, our affiliate in Phoenix is hearing that the AG met with Bill Clinton on a plane last night for close to an hour. They seem to think it's somehow connected to the Benghazi report released today. I'm not sure what the connection would be, but hoping I can provide them some guidance ASAP. That was the very first email that came in. The next email that comes after that is immediately, the email goes, is forwarded from the Office of Public Affairs to the Deputy Chief of Staff and Counselor to Attorney General Lynch and to the Press Secretary for the Department of Justice, literally within a minute of this being received, Logan. We know about the media's reluctance to put this in, but it shows that this became a media situation and a public, basically a crisis management situation early on.
Yeah, absolutely. When you frame it that way, it's something that you can't really look at. I mean, look, there's obviously good journalists and bad journalists, and thankfully there's some good ones out in local affiliates. I think we really should be turning to a lot of those local affiliates that are, you know, independent, really independent journalists. When you really look at it, they're being, you know, run by not necessarily ABC,
right?
But they're ABC affiliates, and I think those are where you could turn to see some really difference of opinion. And clearly, they started this just massive case.
So it starts with the subject matter of this, Harry, is Bill Clinton meeting ? That's how it starts. So you've had a chance now to look at the documents. Give me kind of your overview of where you see this.
Jay, I would simply start with this fact. Everyone involved knew the meeting between Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton was improper from the get-go.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
The FBI took affirmative steps to prevent the photographers, from taking pictures.
Right.
Why? Because they knew that this was an improper meeting. And so if you look at the timeline, you will find consistent active steps by the FBI, by the DOJ, and the White House to collude and cover this story up, or in other cases, to simply deceive the public.
Yeah. So this is, look, we've had a week to analyze this now. And we've had five and a half days to analyze this. And we've got a much better picture of what took place here. We come back from the break. I'm going to walk you through it. But it all started with an ABC affiliate starting this story that ends up being one of the big scandals in Washington, no question about it, and now subject to a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing. We're going to be back with more analysis on this. That's what this program is going to do today. So stay tuned.
The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is now more important than ever. At the ACLJ, we're engaging a number of vital issues. We're standing up in defense of life at the Supreme Court. We're successfully challenging the Obama administration's shadow government in federal court. And we're defending Israel at the United Nations. The work of the ACLJ is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a vital role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the American Center for Law and Justice right now and call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. Or you can participate online at aclj.org. Thank you very much for your support. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
So we just told you that this whole situation between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch was uncovered on that airplane tarmac by a local ABC News affiliate. At 1:14 p.m., Mike Levine from ABC News brought that information into the Department of Justice in an email. Within 1 minute of it coming in, there was a response and a forward to the Deputy Chief of Staff and Counselor to the Attorney General at the Office of the Attorney General, as well as the Press Secretary for DOJ. Content, we need to talk. I'm on my cell. Then it's redacted. Based on the time zones, it appears that they may have been, the individuals receiving this may have actually been with Loretta Lynch as this was breaking. So we put that together as well since we first talked. Let me go to Than Bennett in Washington. This got a lot of media covers this week, some because it should have, others because, quote, they were forced to do it. I think in all cases it should have been covered, but a lot of the media has now had to cover it. What's your assessment and how's it playing up there?
Well, first of all, only two real reasons that it was covered at all, Jay. One, and you already mentioned it, the local affiliate. And two, frankly, the long work that we did at the ACLJ and others as well. Look, this was a long-term effort. We got stonewalled at many turns, and finally, we just uncovered the evidence, so they had to cover it. But here's my main takeaway, Jay. The speed with which this was elevated up the chain of command within the Department of Justice, and by the way, other agencies, which I know you're going to get to, that confirms to me that they knew instantly that this was a major, major problem. This was crisis management from literally the first minute that it came out.
Well, you know, Logan, it's interesting because literally, as Stan just said, within 1 minute of that email, and we don't have it broken down by seconds within that minute, but within literally a minute of the email being received, it was sent to the ranking Office of Attorney General official in charge of things with, quote, crisis management named Matthew Axelrod. He was the principal associate deputy attorney general. He was the number two to the deputy attorney general of the United States at the time, Sally Yates, famously known as the one who refused to enforce President Trump's executive order on immigration. But interestingly, that was Sally Yates, but Matt Axelrod is known as a crisis manager. So they knew at the outset here they were in crisis mode.
Yeah, absolutely. You can see it from the very, very beginnings, from the first statement. You see that someone writes an email, says, hey, maybe this is connected. Clearly it was, regardless of what they want to say, and you can just see the meltdown unfold.
Yeah, so Harry, as you know, as we've started piecing this together, and we're only within the first minute or two here, this is, I'm looking at it going into the first 5 minutes of this, and it's already at the Office of Attorney General. This particular email was sent to the Deputy Chief of Staff for the Attorney General, for Attorney General Lynch. She's now aware of the situation. It was so important that one of the emails from Matt Axelrod, who's the crisis manager at the Department of Justice at the time, said, I can step out and hop on a call. Is there a conference line? I mean, they knew that this was a very serious situation unfolding because, remember, this is at the backdrop of Hillary Clinton about to be interviewed by the FBI in the whole email scandal.
I think you're absolutely right, Jay. But I would also pose this particular question. Perhaps they already knew the outcome of the FBI investigation, and they were concerned that this would upset the pre-arranged story that they were planning to get out, particularly FBI Director Comey's news conference several days later.
Well, you know, at one point, within, now we're in about 30 minutes, and again, these are, I'm trying to connect for everybody some of the names that were involved here. So you see this name, Paige Herwig. She was the counselor to the Attorney General. That's a very senior position. Now, Than, the Senate Judiciary Committee has asked for an inquiry with regarding to the whole Loretta Lynch matter. What is the status of that? Because then I'm going to bring in a little-known fact, although our radio audience may know this fact, but many may not, of who Paige Herwig is and what she has to do with this.
Well, I won't give the spoiler, Jay. I'll leave that to you. But listen, the staffers of the Senate Judiciary Committee, you're going to talk about one of them in a minute, are now preparing who they need to talk to determine what the Department of Justice and the FBI did in response to this ABC request. So the staffers at the Senate Judiciary Committee are now trying to decide who they need to talk to about who coordinated these talking points. Go ahead. I'll leave the next revelation to you.
And of course, the person at the Senate Judiciary Committee staff that may be involved in doing that was no one else other than the then senior counselor to the Attorney General. This is this Paige Herwig. So Paige Herwig is the counselor to the AG. She is now Dianne Feinstein's, one of her senior lawyers. Dianne Feinstein's committee is investigating the whole Loretta Lynch matter. But her lawyer worked for Loretta Lynch, Harry.
Absolutely. So this furthers the collusion narrative. Paige Herwig is in position to draft questions concerning the Lynch-Clinton meeting for her boss, Dianne Feinstein.
How is that possibly okay? I mean, how is that? Now, maybe we'll find out she's not involved in it because she shouldn't be. But why is that even okay?
It's okay, Jay, because it seems to me the deep state, the shadow government, is still alive and well. We have Washington insiders investigating and clearing one another. It's an insidious process.
So I've got an email chain here that includes, and this is document number, we're doing this like a deposition, 102. And I don't know if we have that in our document. This is the one that has Ms. Herwig on it. And the email says suggested edits from me, that is from Carolyn Porcorny, who was in the Office of Government Affairs, OAG's Office of Attorney General, Paige being Paige Herwig, and Office of Legislative Affairs. So they've all reviewed it, and they made changes. Now, here's what's interesting about this document. And I'm showing up for our cameras so you all can see it, but our radio audience, let me tell you what's there. They black out what they edited. But on that email, and this is what we now know, was this lawyer who's now with the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now, what is the oversight then that's going on with the Senate Judiciary Committee?
Well, this is the look behind the scenes that people need to understand, Jay, because the next thing that the committee would do was actually call to either testify in open hearing or maybe do an interview behind the scenes with the people that made edits of the talking points. So you would expect someone like Paige Herwig to be one of the very first people that they called in to say, what really happened behind the scenes? What were you driving for? What were the talking points? We understand that they were redacted. They have, you know, maybe exceptions, but we have clearance to see those. They would want to talk to Paige Herwig. Well, do you think Paige Herwig, Jay, is going to invite Paige Herwig to come and either testify or do an interview behind the scenes? I don't think so. So, honestly, the natural course of these investigations is not possible here because they're the same people involved.
Because you could not make this stuff up. I mean, we were looking at the document. So let me get it a step further for everybody. So then there's an email at 151. It's document number 105, again, like it was in a deposition. So we have the actual document. And Logan, this one says, thanks, Melanie. We'll show this to the AG now. Can you also prepare a couple of TPs for the press avail? TPs being talking points.
That's right. As we all know, what kind of unraveled after this was a lot of, we talked about our grandkids, and we talked about a lot of those things that came up that a lot of people just laughed at, because even if it was true, it was still a power play, and it was still something that was not appropriate. Even if, like, let's put that on the, like, even the fact of if everything she said was true, it still was not an appropriate action that took place.
So I look at that and the press availed. So at that point, Harry, it becomes very clear here that they know, and that's why we're giving you some real detail on this. Let me play Loretta Lynch's sound on this, because this is what she said.
Well, I did see the president at the Phoenix airport the other night. As I was landing, he was headed out. He did come over and say hello and speak to my husband and myself and talk about his grandchildren and his travels and things like that. So that was the extent of that. And no discussions were held on any cases or anything of that. And he didn't raise anything about that either.
They talked for an hour. I mean, an hour on the tarmac. And she said at one point she didn't know what to do because the president had a heart condition and she didn't want him to stay outside in the heat. I mean, what you could have said is, Mr. President, we're interviewing your wife, this former Secretary of State, on Saturday. It's not appropriate for us to meet. That would have been the response. And by the way, did she recuse herself from this? The answer to that is no, she did not. She said, well, I'll look what my career bureaucrats say. Here's what's interesting, of course. This is jumping ahead a lot, but we'll talk about this in a little bit. James Comey uses this as the basis upon which he goes public on this whole Hillary Clinton matter back in July of last year. So let's not forget any of this. So that's why context is very, very important. I'm taking you to 158. And at 158, it's interesting because now we've got the Office of Deputy Attorney General involved, the Office of the Attorney General involved. We have the Office of Public Affairs involved. And the content is, others are requesting that edit as well, but I'm happy to discuss. What is that edit? We don't know that edit. I think they just had, there it is. So they redacted out that edit. Let me tell you what we're doing. We're going back to court to get that document. Because, Harry, this is what they did. They released what was going on, but they sure don't want to show what that edit is.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things that the Senate Judiciary Committee should do is it should call first Paige Hurwick as a witness and have her testify under oath and then excuse her from drafting questions from Senator Dianne Feinstein. That's the first thing they need to do. In addition, as you have pointed out correctly, we at the ACLJ are going to continue to vigorously pursue this
yes.
case, as we should, and we are going to try to make sure that the chips fall where they may.
We're going to get all of the information that we have over to the Senate Judiciary Committee and other relevant committees that are checking this out. We'll talk more about the next step on that when we come back from the break. Coming up next, we're going to talk more about the talking points, but you know what we're going to talk about? An alias for the Attorney General of the United States, also known as Elizabeth Carlisle. We've got a lot more ahead. You're going to want to stay tuned as we give you this in-depth analysis of what we found in this major case out of federal court involving President Clinton and Loretta Lynch, former Attorney General. Back with more in a moment.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is now more important than ever. At the ACLJ, we're engaging a number of vital issues. We're standing up in defense of life at the Supreme Court. We're successfully challenging the Obama administration's shadow government in federal court. And we're defending Israel at the United Nations. The work of the ACLJ is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a vital role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the American Center for Law and Justice right now and call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can participate online at aclj.org. Thank you very much for your support.
Well, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We've taken you through the first few minutes of what transpired on that tarmac, or at least the email response from the Department of Justice. Of course, the FBI told us they weren't involved in this, and we're going to find out in moments they were, of course. We've had that. Well, now we had gave you the disclosure that the Attorney General was actually using an alias, and her alias was Elizabeth Carlisle. Let me go back to Than for a minute here before we get more back into the documents themselves. Than, what is the kind of some are saying, oh, this was a year ago, the election's over. But this goes to the core of justice, and it goes to the core of equal justice under the law, because it looks like there's multiple standards applied depending on who you are here.
Well, remember, we keep hearing words like recusal and collude, and the biggest examples that we have of that are the case we're talking about right now. And, Jay, to this point, there's really been no recourse for those involved. And I would just argue this. We're talking about a lot of names that we've uncovered during this suit. But what about names that might still be at the Department of Justice or still be at the FBI?
Yeah.
That's really at the heart of why we are still pursuing this, because there are still people serving in our government who were involved in this and who still have access to information who, Jay, quite honestly, they don't have any business having access to that information
so
any longer.
So let's put up the document with Attorney General. That's document 119, if we have it. And we do, I think. It's the email that has the alias on it. So this, as you're seeing on the screen right now, this email is from Elizabeth Carlisle. But in reality, Elizabeth Carlisle, we know, is the Attorney General of the United States, because she ends up signing it that way. I mean, so that's, she's using the alias, they say, for security reasons. That was what the reason that they gave, Harry. But also it makes it difficult when you're doing a FOIA request.
Precisely.
Because no one knows to ask for Elizabeth Carlisle.
Absolutely. And so I would make one further point. We don't know whether she used other aliases. That, I think, is very, very possible. We simply do not know. So I think we at the ACLJ have our work cut out for us, because at every step along the way, the Obama administration, the Justice Department, the FBI has actively engaged in a cover-up, and essentially now they're engaged in a cover-up of the cover-up.
Here's what I raised on that question on the cover-up. And, Than, this is something we've talked about before. As I'm looking at the evidence, and now we're looking at it as trial lawyers here, I'm looking at this. I see the email from Elizabeth Carlisle, but it's a DOJ.gov address. So we know that's this is the first email to Loretta Lynch as Attorney General. By the way, this was within about an hour and 15 minutes of this whole story coming in. Herwig, there's a note on another email that says Herwig, this is again now working for Dianne Feinstein, also worked in the White House counsel's office. We haven't even gotten to the White House aspect of this yet. But in one of the emails, it says Herwig added in a strategize talking points again, this time with the Attorney General. That's what it says. And then it says, works for me. Edits reflected below to address your point as well as additional from folks on the ground. Please send edits in the next 10 minutes. This is document number 125 that we have. What's interesting about that, again, is the substance of that has been redacted. That means it's just blacked out. But we know that there's internal combustion going on, so to speak, here. They're trying to recraft a narrative. So what you're watching here, Than, is a narrative be created because the Attorney General did something that was fundamentally inappropriate.
Yeah, a couple of things,
Jay. The meeting, period, was inappropriate.
They absolutely was. But Herwig herself, she went from the White House over to the Attorney General's office, I would say probably to handle this investigation. And then now she's probably at the Judiciary Committee for that same reason, to follow up on the back end. But to piggyback on the conversation you just had with Harry, Jay, I mean, look, I'm just going to say it straight. The Attorney General was trying to circumvent transparency laws. That's plain and simple what it was. Maybe she wasn't fully successful because we now have those. But you know what? That was sort of the standard operating procedure in the previous administration. It sounds an awful lot like an email server scandal that I remember. Oh, by the way, that's the investigation that this attempt to circumvent transparency laws happened. It just comes from the top, Jay, tapping time and time again.
And I think Than is absolutely correct, but it also points us back to the Benghazi scandal. Again, we had a cover-up. We had talking points. We saw Susan Rice on the
four shows.
On four shows.
Saying it was all because of a video.
This is absurd. But the Obama administration has consistently gotten away with this. Why? Because the media has actively colluded with the Obama administration to cover up their mistakes.
Because they wanted a narrative here that made no sense to anybody that would get the documents. So the next document, you talk about continuing to edit. This is document 135. Again, I'm sounding like I'm taking a deposition here, but for those on TV, you're watching, you could see me. I'm going through the documents. We're putting them up on 135, edited, quote, to include Peter's comments as well. Also cleaned up Carolyn's edits a little to make it a little less clunky. Any further comments? So if this is all about a golf and your grandchildren, what is going on here with all these Department of Justice lawyers rewriting this thing? It's just about how hard would it be? We had a meeting. It was, I've known Bill Clinton for a long time, and we talked about our grandkids and a golfing outing. What in the world is going on here where it's pages after page? I mean, 420 pages of documents and a lot of redacted showing that they were editing feverishly. I mean, I'm at right now at 343. Started at 115, we're at 343. Will do. If you wouldn't mind sending a Word document, that would be great. See attached. That comes in next, right? Then I go down to 409. Melanie, as previously discussed, is the plan to now issue the statement. That's document number 148 in our series of documents here. And again, this is from the Office of Attorney General. The question was just asked at a press avail. Local reporters noted that sources say the AG met with Bill Clinton. It's the same thing. And then it says, Melanie, as previously discussed, is the plan now to issue the statement. That is at 409. At 416, redacted, I'm holding for now. In other words, not issuing the statement. At 420, again, Office of Attorney General to the Office of Public Affairs, Mel, can you email the AG to let her know the plan? Question mark. We're en route to the next location now, but I'm in the staff van. Thanks. So this is happening while the AG is still probably on the West Coast as this is all developing. So we've been able to give you a deeper analysis now, but that's what's going on here. So if this was just about grandkids, I mean, I only got a minute and 30 seconds before the break. This is awful lot of writing about grandkids and golf. I love my grandkids and I like playing golf, but this is taking an awful lot of work to get this out.
And Jay, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How much time do you spend crafting statements when you are talking about your own grandkids?
I just talk about them because I love them. And I talk about, and I play golf, and I don't ever talk about my score because it's usually not so great. But evidently, they had an hour-long discussion about grandkids. I mean, listen, all wonderful, except you know what makes no sense? 430 pages of documents. Here they are. 430 pages of documents to explain. This is explaining why your grandchildren and your golf game. With the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, the Attorney General of the United States, the White House Press Office, and the FBI involved. Sounds a little complicated for a little meet and greet? Sure does to me. But that's why I'm glad we're able to give you this full recap. And again, we are pointing out, as Harry said, we got to go back and get more documents. So this is the beginning. But we are going to follow up on these documents, folks, because something, as you could tell when you start looking at this, is just not right. And our team, Curtis, did a great job of putting this together. I mean, it is great information in this. It's one of our new associates here at the ACLJ, former law clerk, did a great job of putting this together for us. All right, let's go. We're going to take a break. We're at the end of the first half of the broadcast, which I can't even believe. I'm only into like 48 minutes of the emails. We're going to come back with a lot more. If you don't get the full hour of the broadcast, go over to, of course, ACLJ.org. Most of the stations are now carrying the full hour, but also you can go over to Facebook or Periscope, and it's live there, Apple TV, Roku, wherever you get your media. We're on a whole lot of different networks there as well. All right, we'll be back with more in just a moment. Hey, let's sing it
tonight. The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is now more important than ever, and we could not do it without your generous support. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. Please stand with the American Center for Law and Justice right now and call 1-877-989-2255, or you can participate online at aclj.org. Thank you very much for your support.
everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast. We're giving you a recap. We've spent the week putting together exactly what took place in this meeting, or what we could tell took place in the meeting between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch, but mostly what took place within the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the White House. And we've already summarized for you that we've got the alias with the Attorney General. We got the FBI saying, oh, there were no documents, but yet when we go to court and get an order that requires the production of documents from the Department of Justice. So lo and behold, documents between the DOJ and the FBI, between the DOJ and the White House, all on this. And then we mentioned the fact that one of the lawyers who was previously at the White House counsel's office then was a counsel to the Attorney General, is now the Senate ranking member's lawyer in the Senate Judiciary Committee that's overseeing the investigation of Loretta Lynch. Same lawyer. And so and she's all over these emails crafting the statements. She shouldn't be the lawyer. She should be the witness. So I want to go to Than Bennett on this in Washington quickly. I've just kind of gave you a quick summary to everybody that if you're just joining us, you understand. But I want to go back on the lawyer situation. She was at the White House, ended up at DOJ, was counsel to the Attorney General during this crisis, during this whole meet and greet between the president, a former president, and the Attorney General Lynch at the time. And then now she's over at the Senate Judiciary Committee, where she is one of the senior lawyers that could well be working on this investigation, because Dianne Feinstein signed that letter with Grassley.
Well, what you would expect at this stage of the investigation, Jay, would be for the general counsel of the committee, both the chairman and the ranking member, to get together with their deputy general counsels. That's who Paige Herwig is. And to come up with two things, Jay. One, a list of people that they need to interview, and two, a list of questions that they want to ask those people. Right at the very top of that list, you would expect the Deputy General Counsel, Paige Herwig, to invite whoever drafted and edited these talking points, which would include the counsel, Paige Herwig. So you would have Paige Herwig inviting Paige Herwig to come testify and answer questions that were drafted by who? Paige Herwig. Jay, it is an investigation of themselves.
I mean,
but this makes perfect sense in terms of the deep state. Conflicted officials investigating themselves and absolving themselves of culpability and guilt.
I mean, this is you realize what's happened here. So the attorney, rephrasing this again, what Than just said is correct. So the attorney general in the office of the Attorney General is a lawyer named Herwig, and she was also formerly at the White House. Then she's at the Department of Justice during this crisis, right? And evidently she was at the Department of Justice during this crisis as she had left the White House, because the White House is now involved in email correspondence back with the Justice Department, which is interesting because now case has been referred over involving Loretta Lynch. The email investigation, the tarmac meeting with President Clinton has been referred to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Shockingly, the same lawyer, Herwig, is deputy counsel to that committee. She would literally be investigating herself or asking herself why she edited this. And by the way, there's an awful lot of back and forth, as I've already gone through in the first half hour of this broadcast, and I've only went through the first about 2 hours of this chain of emails. A lot of email traffic for a statement that says basically this, we talked about golf and our grandchildren. And constant questions, can we hold on this? Can we announce the press statement? Melanie, as previously discussed, is the plan now to issue the statement? Mel, can you email the Attorney General to let her know the plan? We're en route to the next location now, but I'm in the staff van. Thanks. This is at 4:20 p.m. on the same day. So this is moving at record speed here. And again, all of that for this statement from Loretta Lynch. Take a listen.
Well, I did see the president at the Phoenix airport the other night. As I was landing, he was headed out. He did come over and say hello and speak to my husband and myself and talk about his grandchildren and his travels and things like that. So that was the extent of that. And no discussions were held in any cases or anything of that. And he didn't raise anything about that either.
That was the extent of that. So for our radio audience, I'm holding it in my hand. But for our TV audience, here it is. Okay? A lot of emails going back and forth for a discussion about golf and children. All right, we've got a lot more ahead, including the White House involvement, including the media's involvement in all of this. So, again, stay tuned. We've got a lot to look. This is phase one of this lawsuit. We went to federal court for this. We were successful in federal court. But now we got to go back and get the answers to these documents. And that's really the key here. It's very important that we do the follow-up on these matters that we're bringing to everybody's attention. And we're going to do that at the ACLJ. Your support of the ACLJ lets us go to court to do just this. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is now more important than ever. At the ACLJ, we're engaging a number of vital issues. We're standing up in defense of life at the Supreme Court. We're successfully challenging the Obama administration's shadow government in federal court. And we're defending Israel at the United Nations. The work of the ACLJ is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a vital role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the American Center for Law and Justice right now and call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. Or you can participate online at aclj.org. Thank you very much for your support. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Back to the broadcast, everyone. So we're now up to the talking points and statements. The Attorney General is fully involved with this. There is an interesting email, and that is an email that comes out, and it's document number, again, it's like it was a deposition. We've already numbered these documents. Document 163. What's interesting about it, it again puts us right, this whole issue of what was going on and what they were trying to craft, right at the Attorney General's level. And this is the one that has Elizabeth Carlisle is it's who it's sent to. So it's from Melanie Newman at the Office of Public Affairs to Elizabeth Carlisle, and it says, A.G. Lynch, we're holding on to the statement for now, given that there wasn't any follow-up in the press avail, until the next day, by the way. We will keep you posted as things develop. Thank you. But then they redacted something in the middle. We're going to go back through all of these. Then there's a three-page redaction where literally three pages are redacted. There's no documents. It's just completely blacked out. I could show it to you right here. And what's interesting about this is the statements. So whatever they were planning on issuing obviously was a lot longer than that one sentence that was given by the Attorney General, because I'm holding it up to you all. I mean, I've showed this on multiple TV broadcasts, and here it is. And nothing happens. So then you ask yourself, well, what could possibly happen next? Well, here's what happens next. After we have the letter with the alias from the Attorney General, we end up with this. We are holding on the statement for now, given that there wasn't any follow-up. We said that. Thanks to all who worked on this. This is document number 168. You know who that's from? The AG, the Attorney General. So all of the whatever they had prepared to release, Harry, they decided not to release them because they weren't getting enough press follow-up. And in a moment, we're going to discuss why that's the case.
So essentially, in order for the Attorney General to talk about her grandkids, she needed to talk to 10 to 15 other people.
Including mostly lawyers.
Who were not at the meeting.
Right.
Imagine that. So why would that be helpful to the Attorney General unless she was engaged in some type of cover-up?
Here's what I wonder. I got a question for you, Harry. This, I thought about this. Could have it been at that point that she realized once she did the meeting that there may have been an ethics issue? And that she was trying to cover herself because, wait a minute, I'd had this meeting. It's now public. We're about to interview Hillary Clinton, the FBI director. Because James Comey, I want to get that statement from James Comey, where he makes that statement about, oh, I went public because of this. So all what we're not seeing right now, could that be it?
It could be, Jay, but I would argue that she knew the meeting was improper when it happened.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And so now she wants to cover up her steps. The Washington Post has famously said that democracy dies in the darkness. I would argue that democracy dies in collusion and cover-up, and this story illustrates that particular point.
So here's what we've got now. It develops then, and this is what's interesting. What is your sense with the Judiciary Committee on what they're asking for right now?
Well, I think they want to talk to the people involved. I think much like us, Jay, they want to know what was in those talking points. And quite frankly, I think they want to know about what you just talked about, which is the delay in putting it out. I mean, look, I read the exchange that you just read as someone who only wants to give information if they are forced to. And, you know, Harry may have some doubts about whether or not she was worried about recusal. I absolutely think she was worried about recusal. Jay, if this was all about how to respond to a local ABC reporter about a conversation that involved golf and grandkids, it would have never consumed as many employees at the Department of Justice and the FBI as it did. So I think at the core of what the Judiciary Committee wants to know is, why did you use so many resources within those two agencies to develop talking points that you didn't use until you were absolutely forced to?
Here's what's interesting about that, because, Stan, I think you bring up a really valid point. But the impact of this tarmac meeting had a direct impact on James Comey's decision to go public on the Hillary Clinton investigation. Take a listen. This is Richard Burr from North Carolina asking the question, James Comey giving the answer.
Was your decision influenced by the Attorney General's tarmac meeting with the former President Bill Clinton?
Yes, in a conclusive way. That was the thing that capped it for me, that I had to do something separately to protect the credibility of the investigation, which meant both the FBI and the Justice Department.
At that point, James Comey is acknowledging that the reputation of the FBI was put at risk by Loretta Lynch's meeting with Bill Clinton on that tarmac. And that's, according to him, is the reason why he wants to make it go public. He went public with his statement. So it obviously had a big impact on him, allegedly. And then, of course, then there's been a lot of controversy with him since. We will save that for another day. What we will not save for another day, though, is the FBI's involvement. The Federal Bureau of Investigation told me in a letter addressed to me, Jay Sekulow, we have no documents responsive to your inquiry. Here it is up on the screen for our television audience, but for our radio audience, that's the letter that was from the FBI, actually, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, to me. No documents responsive. Interestingly, though, we get a document in our FOIA request. Now, we sent in a letter. Let me explain to you how it worked. Freedom of Information Act letter sent into the FBI and DOJ on this tarmac meeting. FBI's response, no documents responsive to your inquiry. Department of Justice, no response. That allowed us to go to federal court. We went to federal court. We won. We got an order for them to produce. They did. We're going to get more produced than we've gotten so far. And then what happens is this. We now have, even though the FBI said there were none, there is an email between the Office of Public Affairs and the Assistant Special Agent in Charge National Security of the FBI, as well as and this is, again, I want to flag a story. This is document number 195 in our documents. Again, it sounds like I'm taking a deposition. You always number your documents, but this is, we're looking at it just that way. So document 195, and the reason we wanted to do this broadcast today was so I could take you through this. So document 195, again, is from Melanie Newman at DOJ. This is to the FBI, Richard Quinn, to Michael Corton over at the FBI as well. And this is what it says. I want to flag a story that is gaining some traction tonight. Daily Caller, The Hill, and Fox News have picked up a local Phoenix news report about a casual, unscheduled meeting between former President Bill Clinton and the AG. It happened on Monday night. Our talkers on this area below, along with the transcript from the AG's Phoenix presser where she was asked about this. Now, we still don't have the document that says what the statements are. But we do know that those statements, Harry, were being crafted. As you said, at some points it looks like there's 12 people on these emails, mostly lawyers.
Absolutely. So, Jay, I believe the FBI knew its credibility and integrity was already compromised because they participated in hiding the meeting between Lynch and Clinton. They then denied us access to the documents, which would confirm their participation in this cover-up. They continue to deny that they have relevant documents. And yet, we have received documents from the Department of Justice which indicate clearly and unmistakably the FBI's involvement in collusion and in covering this story up for quite some time.
At 5:28, there's an email from the Office of Public Affairs that says, content, news in Clinton meeting is breaking. CBS News is also picking up in addition to Fox. So at that point, it goes beyond Fox to CBS News. They already had Daily Caller and, of course, ABC's local affiliate. Interesting to me, if ABC ever ran anything with it, the national ABC News. I think they did. We'll check. Here's what they say, though. This is what's interesting. So they acknowledge that the news is breaking. But then what you see taking place is the talking points, as extensive as they may have been, it says, I sent the transcript and the link to the news clip to the Fox producer. He had already tracked down the video from the presser. He actually thinks that they may not run anything on a table, will keep me posted. He doesn't think it's news. This is what they're saying. And then I also talked to the ABC producer, who noted that they aren't interested, even if Fox runs with it, given this, we are still holding. What are they still holding? Fan, at that point, they're still holding the press release, the talking points.
That's right, and I think the most significant part of that, Jay, is the FBI lied to us. I want to say it again. I know you just did, but look, these emails, these two emails, by law, should have been turned over to us by the FBI. They said that they had nothing responsive, and you know what? It was because the director of the FBI, James Comey, wanted to use this as the reason for intervening. Jay, someone else can come out and give me a reason why what I just stated might not be fact. I can't think of another reason, and even if there is one, the FBI lied to us, and as you're about to say, the media helped them do it.
Yeah, interesting email also. It says from Office of Public Affairs and the Office of the Attorney General, I'm going to flag this for FBI Public Affairs. So FBI didn't know anything about it. We've got emails, and now we know it's been flagged for the FBI Office of Public Affairs. We also know that the FBI said no, told local people no pictures, no photography. Why do they want no pictures and no photography? Because what was taking place on that tarmac wasn't correct. It raised serious, serious legal issues. All right, we've got more to discuss on this. Obviously, we've been able to go through this in great detail now. We know the case. We're going to go back to federal court. Your support of the ACLJ is going to help us do that. We're in a matching challenge campaign. Let me encourage you to go to ACLJ.org. Add your support to our important work as we move forward on this critically important issue. We've got a lot more ahead to discuss. And look, in the days ahead, there's going to be more coming out. But right now, we're giving you a kind of a state of the where we are on this Friday going into the weekend, where we are. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is now more important than ever. At the ACLJ, we're engaging a number of vital issues. We're standing up in defense of life at the Supreme Court. We're successfully challenging the Obama administration's shadow government in federal court. And we're defending Israel at the United Nations. The work of the ACLJ is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a vital role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the American Center for Law and Justice right now and call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. Or you can participate online at aclj.org. Thank you very much for your support.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're giving you the analysis that we put together for this review of what happened in this incredible situation with the Attorney General, former Attorney General Loretta Lynch, who was then the Attorney General of the United States, meeting with Bill Clinton days before Secretary Clinton was going to be interviewed on the probe into the email scandal, what was later called a matter, not an investigation, whatever that means. I want to go into the media coverage on this because Matt Sapowski from the Washington Post sent an email into the Office of Public Affairs and said, "Hey, Kevin, writing a short post about the Attorney General's meeting with former President Clinton, which I'm sure you know is getting pretty wide pickup. I see she addressed it at a presser in Arizona and said they talked about personal stuff and not any active cases. But is there any other context I should know? Any statement from you on or any background you can give me? I'm at," and then it's redacted. That's his number. And then, so this is, apparently, though, the reporter never gets a response to his email and went on to write a piece and noted there was no comment from the Department of Justice. So at that point, when he asked for comment and context, he got nothing, Harry.
Absolutely not. And it's very, very interesting that he didn't get a response because originally he sent an email suggesting that he wanted to put the story to rest. So what does that mean? It means that the media, Washington Post, New York Times, ABC, they were all in on this game to hide the substance of the conversation between Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton.
All right, so here's what's interesting. I'm looking at document number 33 in our documents here. And document 33 is the actual email from the Washington Post reporter. And what's interesting there is he asked the question for context and follow-up. When they say on background, that means they're just trying to get information. It's not for publication. But then he also wanted context. They put in the article that he wrote that there was no comment, in fact. And that was, I found that to be interesting because what happens is, and this I find this pretty interesting, that he puts in there no comment, yet Melanie Newman, this is from the Office of Public Affairs, later kind of scolds him for saying that and for not emailing her and asks him to remove that line. Zapowski, this is the reporter, is the one who tells Melanie that he wants to put it to rest. Those were his quotes. But again, it shows the level of whatever was going on here, the deception, the cover-up, the recasting what took place. It shows that there was an awful lot of people involved for what was supposed to be a story not about much, but it ended up being about a lot, and it caused James Comey ultimately to issue the statement about Hillary Clinton because he was trying to restore the credibility of the FBI, which I don't think he did a very good job of, quite frankly. What's interesting in this response is that when he asked the questions, this is Matt Sapowski, and asked for the additional comment, he does not get significant follow-up. There is another email at 11:23 p.m. This is going into the night now. I mean, this is how the story is breaking. From Newman, again, Office of Public Affairs, to the Washington Post reporter. And this is what it says. "He's with her, but he's staffing her, which means he's not always available. You could have called me before reporting a no comment. I've been sending everyone the full transcript from yesterday and today's press conferences where she addressed this. No additional comment needed when you have her on record. Happy to forward along." And then Zapowski says, "Oh, sure, send along. I just figured he'd be better since he was with her and on West Coast time. I did say in paragraph 2, she acknowledged publicly and quoted her." Then, and this tells you how the Department of Justice at that point is working with the Washington Post. "It would be much appreciated if you would remove the spots where you did not return calls for comment." In other words, remove the sentence where you said you did not receive a return to your a return call to the question that you laid out or the email that you sent. And then he makes some changes in the story. "The story has been updated," is the next thing we hear. And that was at 11:45 p.m. And the story update, I think, takes out those statements. I mean, Harry, there's a lot of ways to explain it, but none of them will give a cover for what happened here. The way I explain it is this was a crisis situation for the Department of Justice, especially for the Attorney General. She was in crisis mode, had 8 to 10 people involved in this at the highest levels. We haven't even gone over to the White House portion of this yet, and they knew they did something wrong. It's not just about the meeting. It's the perception of that meeting.
Absolutely. So everyone involved knew that the meeting itself was improper. However, virtually everyone involved agreed to a fix. In other words, they were attempting to affirmatively deceive the American people with respect to the importance of the meeting. And that then triggered FBI Director Comey's statement on July the 5th.
I mean, there's one email. regarding the trip to Los Angeles and still being asked, the Attorney General's being asked questions, where the email says that there are a lot of angry people with a frown face. It's document number 230. And this is, again, this is showing you the kind of the nature of what took place here. I mean, this is a serious, serious matter. And when I look at it and I look at the document, here's what I see. And I see this. There are a lot of angry people. This is from, this is actually to the Department of Justice, Office of Public Affairs, from JMD, which we need to figure out who JMD is. But I mean, literally, there's a frowny face. There are a lot of angry people. And there should be angry people then, because what the Attorney General did and the discredit she put to the FBI and the Department of Justice on this is pretty incredible. And they haven't recovered from it since.
They haven't, and nor should they. I mean, this should be a stain on their record. But I would just say this last layer we're talking about, Jay, that really focuses on the media, this is maybe the worst of all, because it is very clear looking through this transcript that the Washington Post reporter did not want to write this story because he knew it reflected poorly on them. But all of the other outlets were running with it, so he was forced to. And Jay, let's just put it in layman's terms. He reached out, tried to get the best picture he could get to put on this story. When he did not get a comment, he ran with what he had. But then when he was reprimanded, when he was lectured by the Department of Justice for the way he did it, what did he do? He changed the story.
Yep.
He changed the story and made the edits that they requested. That's not okay.
Yeah, then my editors are still pretty interested in this. I'm hoping I can, quote, put it to rest. That's in document number 46. So on it goes. Then we have the White House aspect of this. And there's not, do we have the statement from the White House press spokesperson, Josh Earnest, where he said basically, talk to the Department of Justice about this? Let's go ahead and play that one.
I think the bottom line is simply that both the president and the attorney general understand how important it is for the Department of Justice to conduct investigations that are free of political interference. And that's been a bedrock principle of our criminal justice system in this country since our founding. The rule of law is paramount. And every American citizen should be held accountable to that rule of law, regardless of their political affiliation.
Yeah, well then, how does that explain the fact that you were notified of this situation on the tarmac? And how is that not looking like interference? I mean, with all the probes that are going on, you know, right now in Washington, how come there was never a grand jury on this? Why were no witnesses put under oath? You know, Hillary Clinton was never put under oath. None of them were put under oath. So how is that supposed to be okay? And that and the statement there from Josh Earnest, here's the problem. It wasn't equal justice under the law. It's two completely different systems. That's the problem, Harry.
Absolutely. So the rule of law was not paramount within the Obama administration. This case clearly demonstrates that. Secondly, this case clearly demonstrates what was paramount in the mind of the Obama administration, and that was the election of Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Dan, where does this go? So we got it. We're going to take all of our data. We're going back to court to get more. But a lot of people have been emailing us and comments that have come in and phone calls that have come in have said, what does this, where do we go with this? Because this is a serious situation that should be looked at. We now know Senate Judiciary has it, although there's a conflict way out there on that one, no question. Where does this go?
Well, the Inspector General should look at it. The committee should look at it. But honestly, Jay, I think to get the unredacted documents and to get real answers, we're going to have to keep going back to court. That's the only way we've gotten answers so far. I suspect it's the only way we'll get answers moving forward.
And let me assure everybody that's listening to us or watching us right now, we're going back to court on this. We're not stopping. We're going to get round two of these documents. Everybody have a great weekend, and we're glad we're able to give you this recap, because at the end of the day, we are just trying to find out what happened here. It was not a good day for the United States of America. It was not a good day for the rule of law. It was not a good day for equal justice under the law. That'll do it for the broadcast. We'll talk to you next week.
The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is now more important than ever, and we could not do it without your generous support. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. Please stand with the American Center for Law and Justice right now and call 1-877-989-2255, or you can participate online at aclj.org. Thank you very much for your support.